CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. The downing of an American MQ-9 Reaper drone over the Black Sea by an aircraft, a warplane, flown by the Russian aggressor in Ukraine. The Secretary of Defense, Mr. Austin, has commented that this was, quote, dangerous and reckless and unprofessional behavior. At the same time, in the Black Sea, we're told that it is unlikely Russia will recover anything useful from a downed U.S. drone. My understanding is that the Russians are attempting to recover the drone. It's very deep in the Black Sea. There are no U.S. Navy elements, to my understanding, in the Black Sea to recover the drone. I welcome Henry Sokolsky, the executive director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center, looking at the history of unmanned aerial vehicles, drones, being downed in conflict zones. And what does this describe about the future of UAVs or undersea drones and the rules of engagement in conflicts? Henry, a very good evening to you. You send me an article that says we reach back several years to other combat zones where there have been downings, generally by missiles fired by hostile powers. Libya's mentioned, Yemen's mentioned, I believe Syria's mentioned. I'm not sure of all of those places. However, what have we learned from these episodes? What in general describes the future that we're moving into? Good evening to you, Henry.
Good evening. What we've learned from the past may not be exactly applicable to this Russian example. And the reason why is in every instance, we're talking about countries that are just dramatically less powerful than the United States. You know, Houthis in Yemen, Iranians, Libyans, Syrians. And I think with regard to these countries, even though some of them claimed that, it was a mistake, some of them said, no, we did it. We can turn our other cheek, if you will, and not suffer a reputational loss. The problem with the Russian case is twofold. First, unlike these previous cases, the drone clearly was in international airspace, not over a combat zone. The attack, according to our intelligence agencies, was ordered by the interference, at least, was ordered by the Russian Defense Ministry's senior brass. And it was literally in your face. We have a videotape of what they did. And so the arguments, that they make, we didn't make physical contact and all that, are palpably false. Russia is, for better or worse, a bit more of a peer competitor than, let's say, the Houthis of Yemen. So our reputational profile has been assaulted in a way, for all those reasons, in a way that previous cases, not so much.
The challenge here is what is to be done about the future. If you're going to spend, and this was an expensive aircraft, I remember the number in the millions about how much it costs to put one of these together. And it's flown very carefully at a great distance by someone in what appears to be a trailer with operatives all around him or her flying this drone. It's attached to human beings. The question is how to define the combat zone for a future conflicts. You say it's in international waters, but the Black Sea is clearly a combat zone. It's clearly been militarized by the Russians and the Turks. I believe there is a treaty in place that prevents the U.S. Navy from deploying into the Black Sea. So does this set up a precedent that we're going to see other bad actors, near-peer bad actors, take down drones in the same fashion the U.S. took down that surveillance balloon off the coast of the Carolinas?
Let's back up just a little. In fairness to our Turkish friends, they do not prohibit us from deploying into the Black Sea. They control how you deploy through their strait. You have to announce yourself. If you're a submarine, you have to surface. It isn't that you can't go in. And in fact, international law has been exercised by the Montreux Convention and the Black Sea in an exemplary way, I would contend. It's that that kind of rule set is being pushed aside by a unilateral statement that the Russians have made that, oh, well, we have a new zone for our special military operation. So instead of 12 miles out, if you're operating 40, which is roughly where that drone was, we're going to knock it out. Well, the Chinese would, you know, love that precedent because they have self-defense identification zones for air, traffic that are quite absurd, that go way, way out. And they're trying to enforce that as if that's their sovereign airspace. Similarly, the Chinese are saying, oh, you got to have a permit to put anything underwater in the South China Sea, even if it's beyond the recognized international water limits, territorial water limits. We have to know everything. And if not, you know, there may be accidents. We may dredge things up, heads up. Well, this is the beginning of graffiti in the neighborhood and gang warfare. And it's a little bit more likely with the drones because there isn't a human on the vehicle. And it's a bloodless act of war, but it is an act of war. So what we have in these statements by, you know, Mr. Austin and Miley and others is an evasion somewhere between the thought that this was an accident and that it was an act of war. So you get reckless and unsafe, unprofessional, aggressive, hazardous, risky, unsafe again. So that's okay, but there are going to be some knock-on effects as to what the Chinese and Russians might do next.
We're looking at a future where the drones are going to dominate the battle space. I've been doing reporting with Defense One, and one of the things I learned is that they're right now experimenting with taking the MQ-9, the older Reaper, the older drone, and turning it into a mothership of what appeared to be a constellation of small drones that would fly off the mothership, swarm, and go and come back and provide intelligence in that fashion. Now, I mentioned this because it was in the news. We can imagine all other iterations where we get to a point where the warfighters have drones out everywhere and can push a button and fire a missile anytime they want. Do you take down those drones? Do you take them all down? Is that an act of war to defend yourself from the enemy having eyes and sensors on you?
Look, in combat zones, the problem set is more straightforward. Of course, you in a combat zone, you do that. Where things get tricky is doing that outside of a combat zone when you're not a combatant. And that's what the Russians were doing to us. I mean, we are not combatants in the Ukraine war. We are supplying and supporting, but we are not. We do not have active troops, and we have not declared war against Russia in this campaign. It's gray. I assume there are some American supervisors. So, we were entering, an interesting area. But I think it's clear that there are problems when things are being shot out of the sky by combatants against non-combatants in international airspace or international waters. So once you get into the combat zone, I'd say it's a little bit easier to say, yeah, you shoot whatever you can shoot to prevent the worst.
All right, let's move to an example from history to puzzle through. There were two U.S. destroyers in 1941 that were attacked by German U-boats and sank with great loss of life. And yet there was no war between the United States and Germany at the time.
Right.
This was prior to Pearl Harbor. The President Roosevelt at the time made the decision not to press the case. In other words, to explain this in terms of collateral damage. However, that explanation didn't stand up once Pearl Harbor came along.
So right.
We cannot anticipate that this so-called non-combat zone surveillance is not a predicate to combat.
Yeah, no, look, there are lots of examples where we've turned the other cheek because we did not think we were ready or willing or wanting war. And you always have that prerogative.
I have 30 seconds. Go ahead, Henry.
I think what the unmanned systems does is it increases the aperture for those kinds of incidents. And, you know, so we're leaning in a world where we, you know, have to make some more decisions about turning the other cheek or not than we ever did before.
Do we expect that drones will be taken down? Is that the future of war, Henry? Just a few seconds.
Absolutely. I think we've got to be able to defend these drones if we want them to do their work. And that's going to be a new military requirement.
Henry Sikalski is the executive director of the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center. A drone is down in the Black Sea. The future is next. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.